Welcome to OTP number 9, the official Titans podcast. My name is Mike Keith. As usual, Amy Wells is here.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Fabulous. How are you?
Well, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, April the 25th. You are on your way to Dallas for the NFL draft.
I am in a few short hours. I'm hitting the skies hopefully coming back with a new player.
And hopefully the Titans player will be in Dallas.
Oh, gosh. I hope so. I have my fingers and toes crossed that he will be there.
Jim Wyatt does as well. And you know it's a big show because the great Jim Wyatt is back with us on the OTP. Welcome back to the program.
I appreciate you guys having me on here.
And you're on your way to Dallas.
That's right. It's been great in the last couple of years. I know Amy, Ashley, and I were all there. You know, we saw Jack Conklin come across the stage, talk to him after he was off the stage first. And then last year, obviously, Corey Davis, then Adoree Jackson talking to him and you know, on the steps in Philadelphia, and then flying back with all three of those players was pretty cool. Now, you know, I know Amy and I have talked about this. Now, will the player be in Dallas that the Titans pick? We'll see. There's a lot of uncertainty heading this draft. Will John Robinson move up? Will he move back? Will he take a guy that's in Dallas? Will he take a guy that's somewhere else? I don't even think John Robinson knows at this point because you just don't know when you're picking at 25.
How many drafts have you covered in person?
Just two. Yeah, just the Philadelphia and Chicago.
Since you joined the team.
Right. And to be honest with you, I mean, I think, you know, at the Tennessean, it's not that they were cheap and didn't want to send you to the draft. It's just so much happens here. I think a lot of people assume that, you know, John Robinson, you know, Mike Vrabel, you know, the team is in Dallas. The reality is those guys are all here. This is headquarters. Most stuff happens here, but it is a home run when you're working with the team and you can get access to these guys before anybody else. Obviously, the Marcus Mariota draft, he watched the draft in Hawaii. There have been a lot of drafts where players aren't there. And, you know, those guys are on a conference call here after they're picked. Mike Vrabel, John Robbins will have press conferences after they're picked. So there's a lot that happens here. But it sure is nice to be there and get first access to those guys when, you know, if they are there after being picked. But that doesn't always happen. The Browns had, was it three picks in the first round last year?
None of them were there.
Yeah. So that can happen.
Kind of typical in what turned out to be an 0-for year for the Browns.
They started with 0-for real early.
They were 0-for 3 at the draft. They probably will not be 0-for 3 this year. I think both of their first round picks are going to be there. So the point you're making from the team, Joey Baranco from the equipment staff, Anthony Pastrana, who's in charge of all of the video for the football end, what you used to call the tape, the film, whatever, he's there. And then I guess Jared Puffer is there from media relations. Amy, outside of that, that's it from the team. To Jim's point, everybody else is here at St. Thomas Sports Park.
Absolutely. So there's a little bit of when we go – little bit of FOMO, fear of missing out. You know, you feel like you're so far away from everything that's happening, but at the same time, you're right in the thick of this huge league event, which is so fun. But yeah, very small group of people goes from every team. It's kind of like that, and everyone's headquarters is back at their facility.
The atmosphere is great, and I know it's going to be great in Dallas. You know, I think 20,000-25,000 expected inside, 100,000 people expected on the streets. The red carpet event leading up to it's really cool, just to see in the hoopla and the fans at the event. That's really quite a spectacle. And so it should be fun whether the guy is there or not. I'm glad to be headed down there, looking forward to seeing how they pull it off. And maybe it will provide a sneak peek of what it's going to look like in Nashville next year. I think that's the hope, is that this thing will be in on the streets of Broadway in 2019.
It should be.
I hope so. If not 2020.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, so to both of you, does Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, get booed more in Dallas after the Ezekiel Elliott situation a year ago than he got booed in Philadelphia?
Oh, absolutely. Because Philadelphia boos the commissioner no matter what. Now they will be combining forces with the Dallas Cowboys for the first time. They've probably combined forces for anything. And I think the boos are going to be outrageous. I think it's going to be a chorus of booing.
Jerry Jones says he hopes they don't boo.
He's lying, I think.
Yeah, I mean, more people, more noise, I think. And it was packed, you know, in Philadelphia last year, but it was an outdoor venue. The booze kind of drift off into the clouds when you're in an outdoor event. This time, I don't know whether the roof is open, how they're going to handle that.
It's going to reverberate off of everything.
Yeah, a lot of that noise is going to be inside of the stadium. And then, so I'm expecting a lot of boos. I mean, Dallas has been challenged. They've got a top Philadelphia. They don't ever like to come in second to Philly. And so you know they're going to turn it up a notch.
The phone calls that John Robinson is going to get, or the phone calls that he is going to make, would seem like they're not going to happen until Thursday night. It would be a surprise, Jim Wyatt, if anything happened with the Titans moving forward or backwards from 25 before the actual draft gets started. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I mean, I think he gets leverage, you know, as the pick draft goes on, and maybe the teams at 20, 21, 22, they have a pool of players, and they're looking like, okay, we're not going to get these guys. Let's move out and take a shot at somebody else, you know, a little bit later. So I don't think John Robinson probably can do work until we see what happens early. And then I think teams maybe in the back half of the draft, I think there's a scenario, a more likely scenario to me, is that some of those teams picking behind the Titans try to move up and get somebody. And John Robinson, who has said he's not happy with six picks, he tries to turn that into more picks and maybe moves back a little bit.
I think you have no idea what any other team's draft board looks like. And as people slowly start coming off of that board, as Jim was saying, lower teams are going to try and move in. And you could have a situation like you had last year when there was kind of a run on wide receivers all of a sudden, and there's generally a run on some sort of position, and you see a lot of them go off the board at once. That's when things start moving into action. Before then, you can kind of assume and try and get a good read, but it's when people are actually start disappearing off the board is when the deals get done and things start to go into motion.
All right, I want to ask you guys this draft question. Player that is going to get picked a lot higher than what people think. And I'll give you mine just to get the ball rolling. Mike McClinchy, offensive lineman, Notre Dame, I think is going to go more highly than probably anybody thinks because somebody is going to need a tackle. And so they're going to grab somebody that most of the experts have down in the 20s, maybe even out of the first round. He's one for me that I think will go higher than anybody expects because somebody is going to need a tackle somewhere. Jim Wyatt, do you have a player that you feel like will go more highly than what most of the experts project?
Well, I'm not sure what the final consensus is on where Baker Mayfield's going, but I think early on he was, you know, early on in this process, he was late second round.
Right.
I mean, late first round. Then he's moved up into top half of the first round. Now he's moved up into top 10, and now you're hearing chatter that he could go, I mean, possibly the Browns. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not, but I suspect he goes top five, and which no one would have predicted, you know, when the season ended.
Jim took mine. Mine was going to be Baker Mayfield as well. I think that you're going to see him in a different spot than where everyone predicted.
Yes or no, does he go one to Cleveland? Yes or no?
Maybe.
Yes or no?
No.
I say no. I don't think they can afford to go down that road, even though I like Baker Mayfield. Obviously, you're getting a little bit of baggage with him, but the guy's a heck of a competitor. He's a guy that can inspire people around him, but he is, I don't know what to say, he's similar to Johnny Manziel or not, but he comes with a little bit of baggage, and he's undersized, and he's a little bit of a risk. And if you're picking one at Cleveland, I think you want more of a sure thing, if there is such a thing.
I think he will go in the top five.
I do, too.
I do not think that Cleveland's going to play that game again.
Yes or no, four quarterbacks in the top five, Jim Wyatt?
Yes.
No.
Really?
I think three.
Who falls out? If you're saying Baker Mayfield is in, you have to have Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, or Sam Darnold. I know in your scenario who I think it would be.
Who you think falls out?
I think, yeah, if somebody falls out of the top five, I think it's Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Barkley's in that five, so that means it'd have to be four out of five, obviously, QBs, because he's no, there's no way he's falling out of that group.
Right.
At least I wouldn't think so.
Right. Yes or no, quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3 in the draft for the first time since 1999. Amy Wells.
Yes.
No.
No.
I think Barkley's going. I think Barkley goes two.
I think Barkley goes two to the Giants unless Baker Mayfield goes one, because at that point, do the Giants say, well, we thought Sam Darnold was going to go number one, and now we think we've got a chance to get Sam Darnold, and we didn't think that was going to happen. We're going to take Sam Darnold.
Yeah, I could see that scenario.
I think the Giants – I talked with someone who knows Dave Gettleman well, and he made very clear to me – that Gettleman values the surest thing in this position. The last time the Giants picked number two in the NFL draft, Jim Wyatt, any idea who they selected?
I can't pull it.
Lawrence Taylor.
Is that right?
1981. He played 13 years. He made all pro, not Pro Bowl, all pro 9 times.
Wow.
So that was a pretty good pick.
That turned out to be a home run.
Well, and that's what they want in this situation. You're looking for someone who you feel like can potentially put on a gold jacket someday. If you're the Giants have not picked high that much. It is really hard to find all the times that they have really gone up and had to pick this high. But it's been 37 years since they've picked number two.
Seriously?
37 years.
Wow. Don't screw it up, guys.
That's it. You don't want to mess it up. All right, so we get to the Titans at 25. Jim, all through the process, you have run the gamut of all of the mock drafts. The majority of them have outside linebacker or inside linebacker as the top choice. When you look at the depth chart and you see numbers in terms of numbers of players at spots, it certainly feels like outside linebacker or inside linebacker make the most sense, but John Robinson's going to take the very best player he can. If it's not an outside linebacker or inside linebacker, are all bets off in regards to position?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the team has – you talk about numbers. I mean, the team is low on numbers at receiver, and people would say, well, how can you take a receiver after taking Corey Davis last year? I'm not saying that's what it's going to be. But it wouldn't shock me. The most popular picks in the mock drafts right now, Rashawn Evans, I think, is now past Landry for being the most popular pick. I think I did a list of 27, 28 guys. I think at least 10 had Evans, then Landry.
Who doesn't like an Alabama linebacker?
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about their history, yeah. If you're ever going to pick a player from Alabama, and there are a lot of great ones, gosh, their linebackers have been amazing over the years.
Yeah, except for the one taken early last year could turn out to be trouble in San Francisco.
That's why he went 31st. Yeah. He was a top 10 talent, but he went 31st because of all of that.
Yeah, but I think Evan certainly would be a good player at a position of need for the Titans. But, John Robinson, because of what he's done, signing 8 players in free agency, hitting a lot of key spots to give him depth, he's got a lot of flexibility heading this draft.
But that's the beauty of this draft. I mean, we have no clue what's going to happen because this Titans roster, by all accounts at this time of the year, is pretty solid. I mean, there aren't too many glaring holes in this roster. We're picking in a position that is unfamiliar to us for the most part. It's a position where a lot of things could happen. We have no idea what's going on, but that's what makes this so exciting for me. I'm really excited for this draft to kind of get rolling and see how the picture shifts even over a couple of hours because there are so many different possibilities.
We played a game. We tried to find you, Jim, but I think you were already at the golf course.
Shame.
But we played a little game where we had 4 people in the office and we went through the entire Titans roster. And we said, okay, we're going to go through the names. Is he, barring injury, of course, is he a sure thing to make the roster? And we came up with actually 39 guys that we think are pretty much sure things to make the roster, which I don't think would really surprise people with a team coming off a playoff appearance.
And that's out of 64 right now.
Correct.
Yep.
39 at this point. And then there were 12 other guys that were on an NFL roster a year ago who you would say, well, they're maybes. So if you figure half of those guys make the team, then you're at 45. So you don't need lots of players in the draft class, I guess is what I'm talking about. So if you wanted to trade up, which I don't know that John Robinson wants to do because he clearly is not excited about giving up any draft picks, but if you wanted to only have a five-player class, I mean, this would be a year you could potentially afford to do it. And, again, this is not scientific. This is just people sitting around an office drinking coffee saying, well, what about this guy? But it does go to the point where 2 years ago, you might have gotten 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you were lucky.
Yeah.
Because the GM was new, the coach was new, the system was going to be new. Now, even though the coach is new, the systems aren't going to change that much. The personnel still fits whatever tweaks the system is going to make.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thought there, too. I mean, and I could see what you're saying happen. I mean, there have been some years we're going to the draft and going into the offseason, really, where your team's looking for – well, this team's looking for four or five starters. Now you're looking for more role players in this draft. I think what John Robinson has to be looking at, and I'm not going to go down through the list of players who are scheduled to be free agents at the end of this season, but it's a pretty good number. And and there's some players at certain positions that they're getting up there in years that you've got to hit on. So you've got to address some players in this draft that are going to be around for a while and who are going to be your stars of the future. That's why it's so important at the top end to hit on these players.
Safe to say that the Titans do not have to select a player in this draft that necessarily has to play this year.
I think that's safe, yes.
And it would be great. And, you know, like a guy like Jayon Brown last year in the fifth round, nobody expected him to play as many snaps. So they will clearly find some, you would think. But it's a nicer situation to have because to what Jim's point is, Amy, they can address a bit of the future and address the depth, maybe get somebody who becomes an immediate starter, but they can be a little more selective where they go, could grab a position where there doesn't appear to be the immediate need, thinking about not only the 2018 Titans, but the teams of the future.
Yeah, there's not the urgency. There's not an immediate need. There's not, you don't feel like we're plugging holes and we have to grab right. bodies because we need someone who can do this position. We need to have a receiver. We need to have a linebacker. I mean, we have those pieces. We're looking to obviously add depth, maybe plan ahead a little bit. But yeah, it feels less just grabbing people because right. we need bodies at this point.
But I will say there are a couple of positions where there's not a lot of depth and you're an injury away from right. having somebody step in and play. One of those is safety. I
mean, safety's the one.
Safety is really thin. I mean, you've got Kevin Byard and Jonathan Cyprian, obviously. Behind that, Brendan Trawick, who played some safety in the Pro Bowl but hasn't played safety in games for this team much. Did he get some, maybe got some snaps in situationals last year? But after that, I mean, the depth chart doesn't give you a lot of options. So you're an injury away. And and last year, Jonathan Cyprian missed a good stretch with a hamstring. And Denora Searcy was the guy that stepped in and played for him. Right now, there's not a guy that you'd feel really confident in being able to step in, a guy who has a lot of experience. Not that the draft pick is going to, but that's one area that that I think probably is going to have to be addressed.
I think you're right. Whether it's in the draft or in that third phase of free agency, which we're in now, and guys are going to start leaking out over the next day or two into next week based on what teams draft. John Robinson has been great in phase three of free agency. And because the Titans have dough, 30 plus million in the cap room, by all reports, you would figure he could continue to do so.
John Robinson is sitting in a great spot right now. There really aren't too many ways that he can lose at this point.
All right, so I want to ask you just for fun. If the Titans could pick anybody outside of someone who's obviously going to go in the top five, and so this is going to end up being your realistic favorite player, I would guess. And you can't say Baker Mayfield or any quarterbacks because you're going to get a quarterback. And you can't say Saquon Barkley because he's going to be gone. Give me, if you were getting to pick and you could do this, Amy, who's your guy?
I shouldn't be allowed to do this because my...
Because you have nine guys.
Well, okay, I have five.
But let's have one. Give me your top guy.
I really liked the safety, Justin Reed. Really? I really liked him. He struck me...
Within the first round?
Well, I liked him. That's why I told you, okay. I can't do this. Those are the people that stand out to me.
I've got one.
Who's yours?
Roquan Smith.
Oh, yeah.
From Georgia, the linebacker. I think Roquan Smith is going to be a star. I think he is going to be on the side of your on your billboards. I think he's going to be one of those dudes the kids buy his jerseys. I think he's going to be like that for a long time. I think he makes any defense better. I think he's a three-down linebacker. I just love the football player. And so that's the one, when he gets drafted at number 10 or 11 or 12 or whatever, part of me will die inside.
Yeah, your heart will break a little bit.
Because, I love watching this guy play football.
Yeah.
And I think for this defense, a guy like that would make it extra special. But that's Roquan Smith from Georgia is mine. Do you have one, Jim?
I do. And since you said it, he couldn't be top five, and I said I think four quarterbacks going the top five with Barkley being the other, that frees up Bradley Chubb for me. So yeah. I'm taking Chubb.
That's a good choice.
There. He's not going to be on this roster because he's going to go early. But he's a game. You hear about game wreckers, game changers. I think he's going to be a dominant player in this league.
I think he's in Cleveland at four if they take a quarterback at one, which is expected.
You think that?
And then they put he and Myles Garrett together. And,
yeah, that would be something special.
So, do you want to go back on Reed? Do you want to go into the first round?
No, I still really like him. Okay. I'm sticking with my guy.
All right.
See you in the fifth round, buddy.
All right. I want to talk for the remaining minutes we have on OTP 9. I want to talk about what we have seen in the voluntary minicamp, which, by the way, it's fantastic to have even sort of football right now, not having to wait until sometime in May. It's been fun to watch the team. Jim, I'm going to ask you, can you tell anything that is immediately different about a Mike Vrabel practice compared to a Mike Mularkey practice? And, you haven't seen a lot, but is there anything that jumped out to you watching this team in the voluntary minicamp?
Well, I think tempo and just, get to the ball, be fast, don't be the last guy to the huddle. I think you definitely see that stress, not only from the coaching staff, but I think it's going to be a peer pressure situation now where guys are going to hold each other accountable. That's one thing I have to say is just the speed is pretty noticeable, and I guess the music maybe.
During the team period.
Right, yep. So there's a different feel certainly, but we're just 2 days in, so there'll be some other things that will come to the surface between – now in camp, I'm sure.
Let me explain the music. They play music while the number one offense is going against the number one defense or the number two defense based on, I guess they want that noise to make communication hard. Also, I guess to amp up the guys, whatever, but it is a change. All right, Amy, well, same question to you. Anything immediately different about a Mike Vrabel practice that has jumped out to you so far?
I noticed the tempo as well. It seems as though they are very intentionally preparing for the speed of a game. They are moving. Everything is run. Run to the sidelines. Run to the line of scrimmage. Run to the huddle. It's very obvious that they are preparing for something. They are preparing for the speed of a game.
And I'm going to say one more. The obvious answer is the difference between last year's practice and this year's is Mike Vrabel. That's a different Mike. But he's very active. He's very, involved. He's going to spread himself around. He talked about spending a lot of time with the linebackers on the first day, but you can tell he's going to make a big effort to be involved in practices. We've seen him at these pro days grab a bag and get in it. I think that's what he's going to do here. And I think he's going to, he's going to send messages, during practice, when they review practice on film. And I think these guys, you have to respect a guy like this. This guy was just in the league not that long ago. He can relate to these guys, and they know it.
Is there an assistant coach, Amy, that has already gotten your attention?
Oh, my gosh. I spent all of today watching Coach Combs.
Kerry Combs, secondary coach.
He doesn't stop. the man does not quit. We had heard all offseason that he's a really animated coach. He's really excited, and he really gets into it with players. Holy smokes! He was more animated than I even thought that he was going to be.
But not like crazy.
Oh, no, not crazy. He's excited.
Right.
He's passionate. He wants to help these guys. He wants them to do something. He's very technique specific. Very, very minute details. He'll stop a guy, and then he'll show them how to do it. And he's making big gestures, and he's yelling the entire time, not in a scary, crazy way, in a helpful way. But wowzers. He held my attention for easily 15 minutes.
He is fun to watch, and he does get your attention, I think, more than anybody out there. I guess I'm going to say behind Kerry as far as – and I don't want to say from a noise factor. We obviously none of us have seen Keith Carter work on a practice field, but I have to say he's kind of got my attention just how vocal he is. And, you know, I've been around some offensive line coaches, whether it was Munchak or Bruce Matthews or even Russ Grimm last year. Those guys are usually pretty low-key. And, I heard Carter around his players teaching, getting involved, trying to get his point across. He kind of jumped out at me a little bit.
The coaching staff is made up of men who were part of 13 different football staffs a year ago. That's NFL staffs. That's college staffs. That's even a high school staff. And yet there appears to be tremendous cohesion. It looks like the clean operation that Mike Vrabel wanted. What jumps out to you, Jim, as a reason or reasons that there has already been so much appearance of cohesion with this staff?
I think Mike Vrabel, you know, in searching to put his staff together, I think he looked for guys with a similar mindset, and there was an understanding going in, this is the way we're going to do it. I mean, he interviewed a number of coaches at each position before he decided on guys. And I think he decided on because he did feel like there was going to be some cohesiveness there, that they would work well with one another. And I think just the work, you know, between that and just spending the last 3 months getting on the same page, I think that's kind of what has led us to where we are today.
That's what I was going to say. You have to realize from the time that they were all hired as a coaching staff, they have been grinding. They have not taken this off season as a time to kind of ease into things. And they started working full days right away. So they've had a lot of time to get on the same page and get to know one another, whether it's at the combine or at pro days on the road or just being in the office. They're putting in full days already. And even Mike Vrabel has said he has to remind himself and his staff that it's not football time yet. We need to make sure that we don't go too hard too soon. But they've still been going pretty hard. And so I think we're starting to see that out on the football field, that these guys are very clearly on the same page.
For Marcus Mariota, the one constant in his 3 years with the Titans has been Jason Michael. Either as his offensive coordinator or his quarterback coach, he's always sort of had his life revolve around Jason Michael. Jason Michael is not here anymore. And now it's a quarterback coach in Pat O'Hara, who comes from Houston, and Matt LaFleur, the offensive coordinator, who also focuses heavily on quarterbacks. Matt and Pat, as Mike Vrabel called them today. How have you noticed, Jim, Marcus Mariota's interaction with Matt and Pat so far, knowing that it's something very different for him?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, I think they've got similar. I mean, Matt's personality is a little bit more low-key, a little bit quieter. I think he's a good match for Marcus Mariota. I think those guys have been able to spend some time over the last couple of weeks to get to know each other. It's a process. Marcus said it himself. I mean, he said, hey, you know, you have to learn new coaches. You're going to have to learn new terminology. You're going to have to learn new teammates. They're just in the early stages of that happening. But I think both those guys arrived with great credentials, good track record with working with other quarterbacks in the past. I think it's going to be a great, you know, situation for the offense and for Mariota moving forward.
Amy Wells, true or false, Marcus Mariota looks better right now than he did at any point during the 2017 season?
I would say true.
Talking physically, of course.
Yes, I would say true. He looks like he's had a healthy offseason to actually focus on football. He's moving around super well. We've seen him do some things where we're like, oh, yeah, hey, Marcus. You
know? 2016 Marcus.
Uh-huh, yeah. He's he's moving around like a guy who is ready to go. And that's really exciting to see this time of year.
Yeah, and he talked about that today in meeting with the reporters after practice, just thinking about how far he's come in the past year. This time last year, obviously there was not a volunteer minicamp in April, but he wouldn't have been able to be out here on the field doing that. He was very limited in off-season work at the very beginning, eased himself back into it during the course of May and June, and it was until training camp in August before we really saw him turn it loose and run. And then even then, you did it holding your breath a little bit, and I think he probably was still testing it out physically and in the back of his mind also realizing, okay, this is another hurdle I've crossed. Now he has no limitations. You can tell he's just kind of letting loose and playing, and he's going to benefit from Deion Lewis being on this football team. He's going to benefit from, you know, from Corey Davis having another year under his belt. And I think he's going to benefit from a Matt LaFleur offense that's going to allow him to do more things himself.
Give me a thumbnail of what you think Corey Davis looks like right now.
You're talking about guys that look better than they did all last year. He's definitely one of them. I mean, I felt bad for Corey Davis last year. He goes through the circuit of getting ready for the draft. He was injured through that process. He finally gets here. You know, never really was quite himself. You know, hurt the hamstring, came back, got hurt again. I think he was thinking too much when he was out there. Now he looks like a guy who's healthy. He looks faster. Looks like he's not overwhelmed with what's going through his mind. And, you know, he looks really good to me.
Let's go through a few of the new guys. Deion Lewis, running back from the New England Patriots, sharing snaps with Derrick Henry in the minicamp. Amy Wells, what do you see?
I knew he was fast. I'd seen him on tape. We had played against him. He's faster than I even remembered or had seen. It's bananas the things that he's able to just make happen because he can use that speed and he's so shifty. Guy can get through anywhere.
Were you surprised about his size?
Yes.
Or lack thereof?
Oh, yeah. He's a tiny guy.
Yeah.
I mean, which I think is to our benefit. I saw him do some things today where he just put his head down and duck right under someone trying to make a tackle. I mean, I think that size works in his favor and works into his game and the way that he plays. But, yeah, he is not a tall man.
Kyle Fonny Muhammad is listed at 5'7", and Deion Lewis is listed at 5'8".
No chance.
Saw him side by side. I think Calfani's got him by.
Well, maybe Calfani grew.
Got him by hair. Maybe that's true. Maybe he has grown a little bit. But
he's young. He could still be growing.
But
nutrition.
It's funny. Last year at this time, or after, not this time because we had not had the draft yet, but when Muhammad joined the team, I took a picture of Derrick Henry standing next to Calfani Muhammad, and the size difference is incredible. I took one of those pictures today with Derrick Henry standing next to Deion Lewis and tweeted out, and this, the comments off the charts just on the difference in those two guys that play the same position. But Lewis gets lost in the crowd and in the middle of the fray, and he, you know, Amy's talking about his speed and how quick he is, and he is, but he's also one of these guys that can bounce and bounce out of trouble and bounce through a hole. And he's a hard guy to handle, and especially when he's in a tandem with Derrick Henry, who's going to lower the boom on you.
Let's talk about wide receiver Michael Campagnaro. Comes from Baltimore. What have you seen from him so far, Jim?
Yeah, he's one of the guys I've been curious about because he had some production in Baltimore. Obviously, comes here known mostly as a return man. I think he's going to give him more at the receiver position than Eric Weems did. And Eric Weems didn't get a lot of opportunity to do that, obviously, but I think he gives you a little bit more juice at that position.
He's got really good hands. Just watching him and some of the plays that he was able to make happen, and obviously it's still incredibly early, but he made some catches that were impressive to me, and I think that he's going to, as Jim was saying, contribute a little bit more at the receiver position than Weems was able to do last year.
But don't you think, both of you, that if he becomes the punt returner, the primary punt returner, and then you could use a Dory Jackson in certain situations, you could bring him in to run back a kick at the end of a game or at the end of a half or in just a critical situation, knowing how many snaps a Dory has to play at corner, how many snaps you want him to play at corner, be great flexibility.
Oh, absolutely. It opens things up a little bit so that there's not, I mean, because Adoree's doing things on offense every now and then too, so that's an incredible workload for him. Someone who's able to come in, take that initial workload off of him with the return job is great. But then someone who can get in for a couple of offensive snaps too, even better.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that plays out. I mean, that whole return game and just and the numbers at receiver, because we're looking at, what, 7 right now on the roster?
Right.
That number's going to grow. I mean, what's it going to be up to, 12, 13 by the time camp starts? Some of them may come in the draft. Some may come – obviously, some will come as undrafted free agents. Will there be another secondary wave of in free agency that could bring a receiver? We'll see. But that number is going to come close to doubling.
Malcolm Butler, the big-name free agent because of all the controversy due to the Super Bowl and all that happened. What kind of versatility can you also see that he is going to allow the Titans in Kerry Combs' secondary?
Yeah, I mean, he can line up. You know, his presence can allow Logan Ryan to do different things, can allow Dory Jackson to do different things. Malcolm Butler obviously can do different things himself. I mean, they've got good numbers at that position. I look at those three, and then – I look at, you know, LaShawn Sims and Ty Smith, guys who were in the fray some last year. Now those guys are pretty quality. I think they're quality backup players. So this team now is in a great position at that position.
Malcolm Butler is an – I feel like I'm saying that everyone is really fast, so maybe I'm just exciting that football is back. But Malcolm Butler can run.
He can really run.
He has been able to stick with every single person that I've seen him go up against, and if not have a step on them, he's doing a great job so far. I'm excited to see him keep going.
Has the battle at left guard started yet?
I think it started, but I don't think it's anywhere close. I mean, we're going to see all those guys probably rotate in, and it's a group that just has Josh Klein re-signed. Obviously, Quentin Spain is back. Kevin Pamphile, Xavier Suofilo, all those guys are going to be working at a number of positions, and I think they'll have a chance to impress during the course of the offseason. But I don't think the real battle starts until the pads come on, and really just to see who has progressed the furthest by the time camp gets here.
All right, so let's have a little fun as we wind down this edition of the OTP. Amy Wells, you're first. Give me two returning guys that the staff is looking to see improvement from as these practices start.
Kevin Dodd, number one.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think
he looks the part.
Oh my gosh. He's just built so magnificently, and he has the athleticism. You just want to see him put it all together. And I mean, Mike Vrabel has said that Kevin Dodd is his project. So I think
project.
That he's gonna be one to watch. And I think Taywan Taylor is the other one. I think Taywan kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit towards the end of last season, and some things weren't clicking for him. So I think that everyone's watching to see where he makes the most improvement, or if he does.
Two good ones, Jim.
Yeah, I'm going to see her too, Kevin Dodd and Taywan Taylor. I'm going to raise her a Jonnu Smith. I did have Dodd and Taylor written down as mine as well. So I'm just going to add Jonnu to that list. I think he obviously overshadowed by Delanie Walker at that position, but I thought when he played well. You know, he's had an off season to work and concentrate, you know, just on football. That's somebody who I'm anxious to see what his second year looks like.
I'll give you another one. Austin Johnson,
yes.
In the defensive line. We've seen Daquan Jones improve so much through his career, and Austin has had the same sort of arc. And at the end of last year, he was playing good football. If he keeps going up in the way that Daquan has, I think he could give them a lot in the defensive line and would be a very exciting player to be able to pair with Daquan and with skinny Jarrell Casey.
His lower body is incredible, just how thin he is. And he's still stout. You know, above the waist, but you know, below the waist, he's definitely
he doesn't have much of a waist anymore.
He doesn't, but that allows him to be explosive. Yeah, he's strong up top, but he's got the explosion and quickness from his feet.
He's always been quick, though, man. Yeah. Jarrell Casey can move weight around like I've never seen.
All right, Jim White, give me an underrated returnee.
Well, Austin Johnson, I did have written down there, so I've got kind of high expectations for him. I've got two guys on that list. I think Jonathan Cyprien is one, just because I thought he ended the season so well after missing a good chunk with an injury, and I thought he obviously showed up with a big play against Kansas City, and made some big plays down the stretch. I think Cyprien is underrated, should be better in year two here. I've got Aaron Wallace written down too. I would say he's underrated because he really hasn't, you know, he's still got a lot to prove because he hasn't been able to stay healthy, but I think he has flashed. So I think he's a guy that I'm at least watching and I think has the potential to make some noise just because of his versatility.
Did Jim take yours, Amy?
He didn't, no. One of mine is David Flewellen. I think that he is going to give people a run for their money because I think he's...
A run for their money. I like how you
wasn't
did
that. Good?
That was good.
Thanks for picking up on that. But I think he's fighting for a spot in this offense, and I think that he's going to rise to the occasion as we've seen him do from time to time. And I think that bringing back Josh Klein is huge for this team. I think his versatility is not unnoticed by me. And I think that that's going to be a huge tool that we're going to be able to use throughout the season.
Mine's Luke Stocker.
Ah.
I think he's obviously arrived late, has a chance to settle in and make an impact as well.
Or play fullback, play the H, play the online tight end, catches the ball better than you think he does. I just think he is a versatile winning type player in an offense that wants to be very versatile. And I don't know that this team's going to be in a lot of three tight ends.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they're going to be in a lot of technical two tight ends because if Stocker lines up in the backfield, he's obviously not a tight end, but he is big. I mean, and the Titans missed that until they got him, having that big, nasty, almost third offensive tackle type blocking tight end.
Yeah, I'm with you. And certainly think yeah, I think he is going to benefit, no question, from having the entire offseason here, getting on the same page with the coaches. It was something he didn't have the benefit of last year.
We've got a lot more to do on the OTP coming up in the next few weeks. Obviously, we're going to review the draft. We're going to talk about a lot of things that probably happened between now and next Wednesday when we're scheduled to record again. And both of you, thanks for joining me, and enjoy your trip to Arlington, Texas.
Sure, yep. Looking forward to it. I know we got to get back to the war room here, you know, before the day ends. I'm kidding there. Yeah. There's a Doberman.
Have you
outside
ever
there.
Been in the war room?
I've been in there when there's nothing. When it's a blank wall. I guess it's probably some point after the draft when there's nothing.
I got invited in there for the first time last off season, and there was nothing on the wall. But I had never actually even been in the room.
Okay.
19 years being in this building, I had never been in the room. But somebody said, let's talk in here. And I'm like, am I allowed to go in there? And there was nothing on the wall. They were painting the wall, actually.
There's like 19 different locks to get through that door. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I walked in there, when, like you said, when there was nothing on the wall. And maybe it was right after I had
Did you think there was food in there?
I don't know what was in there, but I know I walked in and a couple of scouts in there. Right after I had been hired and they were kind of showing me around. Obviously, they wouldn't have shown me that place if it had names up there. But some scouts were in there like, what the heck is this guy doing in here? You know, how are we letting him in here? But, you know, it's certainly a place that's when I walk by that area, I don't even try to take quick peek.
You don't want to know.
No, You don't want to know. And John obviously asked us not to reveal the pick here on the podcast. Oh,
that's right, because actually the draft was last week. They've already made the pick.
Yep.
It's recorded.
The draft, all 256 picks have already been made. What's going to happen Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? Pre-scripted. Somebody will believe that.
If only that were true.
If only that were true. Well, we love draft weekend. All of us do. And we're going to carry it for you on Titans Radio. The first and the second round throughout, and we're looking forward to having that and looking forward to hearing what you guys uncover in Dallas because I know there are always good stories, especially with Titans fans, Titans season ticket members being able to go. So good stuff. I'm glad that you'll be able to be there, and we'll have a great time at the draft party at Nissan Stadium.
I'm eating barbecue the whole time. I might not even go to the draft. I'm just eating.
It's funny, though. You know, there's so much buildup for Thursday for the first round. But when we get back here on Friday morning, that's really when the draft starts.
Friday's
that's,
better.
Yeah, that's the yeah, Fridays. Yeah. You know, you've got more action, and then Saturday's a grind. But you know, the meat of the draft is obviously Friday and Saturday. That's when it'll be crazy here, going from pick, you know, to press conference to conference call, and then seeing how this thing comes together.
The first NFL draft was 1936. Jay Berwanger went number one from the University of Chicago. He was a halfback. Since that time, 33 quarterbacks have gone number one overall. I think Thursday night we're going to have 34.
I think that's a good bet.
I think it's. I would have thought that number would have actually been higher. But, of course, you didn't. For many years, I guess you didn't have a quarterback in every offense. Some still use the halfback in the single wing. But it is a time where quarterbacks are valued. And people say, well, why don't you find a Tom Brady in the sixth round? Well, you'd sooner find a needle in a haystack. If you're going to find a quarterback, your best odds are in the first round. Yep,
no doubt about it.
Jim White, Amy Wells, Mike Keith, thanks for listening to the OTP. We are the official Titans podcast.